9:30 on a Wednesday morning, an opportunity for me to spend a little bit of time talking with candidate for the 1st Congressional District, Kevin Hearn. First of all, thanks for coming to Bartlesville today. Nice to see your face.
Charlie, it's always great to be here. It's great to see the Bartlesians up here. Their folks are just awesome.
Well, and you and I have talked about this before. It is, I think Jim Bridenstine has passed along advice to several candidates that if you want to win the 1st District, the Bartlesville, the Washington County vote is extremely important to you.
Absolutely. You know, it's just a great place. It's a great example for the 1st District. I'd say a great place to use as an example for the rest of the state about how communities should act and, you know, provide for one another and help each other.
Well, we think so, but that may be a little chauvinistic, so I'll
sure
leave the rest
is.
Of it alone. But the 1st District, certainly a good voice for Oklahoma and for the nation and Congress. Thank you for running, sir.
Absolutely.
Business-wise, just for a look at things right now, I don't know how it translates out to the business you own, but certainly the tax cuts, we've seen a lot of bonuses, we've seen a lot of paycheck increases that businesses are able to pass along to their employees or buy new equipment, upgrade procedures because their tax burden is less thanks to the Congress.
Yeah, it's from a business perspective, I think it's just one piece and a start to removing the oppression we've had from the previous administration, from the Obama administration. If we all recall, you remember he said we didn't build that business. Our businesses were a collective group, I guess. But it's one step, and it's also about getting the money back into the job holders' hands so that they can put more money back in their community and realize a little more liberty from the federal government.
And certainly your employees of a owner of McDonald's restaurants, yes, it's done in a professional manner, but many of, I'll say, the jobs that you meet the customer, those are opportunities for young people, for people with their first or second jobs to gain that business experience and maybe move up eventually into management.
Yeah, I've been blessed to have the opportunity to I have several small businesses. McDonald's is obviously the one that's the most noted.
I think that's one we know about.
Yeah, exactly. We have a manufacturing company that has about 190 employees that have CNC operators to, you know, people just move material around. So folks that are very skilled. And again, when you're versus, you know, the entry level versus the folks that have been there for several years, it's great to see more people being able to keep more money in their pockets. It's also great to see that, you know, the economy is improving because it allows us to grow our business. It allows us to put more people on the first rung of the ladder to start climbing the ladder of success. You know, Charlie, we have done so much in this country to dumb down the dignity of hard work, and there are no shortcuts to the mountaintop. People like to think that we could just insert people on the seventh rung of the ladder and it work out well. But, you know, those trials, those errors, those failures that we have at an early age are beneficial to who we are as we get older in life.
Yeah, part of what we learn is knowledge gained through experience.
Yeah, you know, it's really sad, too. If you look at just recently, about 2 weeks ago, the Wall Street Journal had an article that in the highest percentage in recorded history of folks that want a bigger government. And I think it's a testament to what we've seen in the last 8 years of folks blaming the government for the lack of their success. And, you know, it's really, people don't realize until you start seeing and look in retrospect how damaging an administration can be on this country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this year has been not without controversy and conflict with the current administration, with the Trump administration, but he's trying to unravel a lot of what happened over 8 years, and it's people are kicking and screaming as he tries to drain the swamp.
Yeah, and I'm sure there will be some more kicking and screaming somewhere along the line.
It'll never be easy.
It's not going to be easy. Within the state of Oklahoma, education issues, teacher pay are major issues for the voter. That's generally speaking a local and or state issue. Not that the federal government doesn't add some dollars to the mix, but primarily we think of it as a local or state issue.
Yeah, you know it's amazing that when the Department of Education was taken out of the health, education, welfare back in October of 79, it was to make our education in America better. Yet when I talk to my fellow owner operators, you know, we're in everywhere in every state, you know, what are, you know, some of the big issues in your state? Because I just want to understand from a broader scale, one of the number one issues is education in those states. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the federal government's job on education as it was laid out to be in 1980 when it actually started, it's been terrible. It's been dismal. And the budgets have gone from, you know, $10 billion to now $70 billion in appropriations. The growth of the number of people working has, you know, quadrupled. and yet we have less education, a quality of education in America as it relates to around the world. You know, there's never going to be a better fixed education than what happens in local school districts between parents and students and educators in the states. And we don't need to be sending money to Washington, D.C. to have them turn around and make us feel obligated to certain rules and regulations that the federal government imposes upon Bartlesville or Wagner or Tulsa or, you know, Pocatello, Idaho. We need to get the federal government out of the way of local education.
And the elected officials that make those decisions on a local basis, first of all, those are the people that you can walk up to, tap them on the shoulder when you meet them in the grocery store and say, hey, I got a bone to pick with you, or thank you for doing this.
That's right. And Charlie, we're never going to fix these issues until we start doing, you know, much ado has been made about Article 1, Section 8, the enumerated powers, but Article 1, Section 9, we talked about this last week, the appropriations process. Mm-hmm. If you never get back into the regular appropriation process, regular order in the House, you're never going to be able to get after defunding some of these areas. And we keep just piling on year after year with just an incremental increase to the budget without ever looking at appropriating every line item. With it being a cabinet level, it has appropriations that comes from the House, and yet we're just continuing to pile on year after year. And the last time we actually did this work in the House and Senate was in 1996. So we're working off a baseline of what the key funding was, the actual deep dive into expenses in the federal government from 1996 levels, just incrementally piling onto that year after year for now 21 years.
Well, as you mentioned last week, and I think a lot of people will agree with you, I certainly do, that, since I think it was, 1976, you can count on the fingers of one hand the years that we've actually passed a budget in regular order.
Four times.
Yeah.
Four times. And it's really sad. You know, we've got less people working today than we've had. The last time we were at this low mark was in March of 1978. And 62% of Americans working, actually just a little bit less. If you go back, and it doesn't have to move much to make a big delta in what's happening in America. If you go back and you look at the participation that we need from the workforce to really have a great, thriving economy, you go back and look, just 20 short years ago, 97, 8, 9, and 2000, we had budget surpluses in America. Now you contrast that with $1.15 trillion deficit today, and you ask yourself, what's the difference? The difference is the economy was robust. We had a growing technology boom then, and we had welfare to work from 96. That law is still in place, by the way, that we're just not following our own laws. And we set a horizon for people to move to a job and get off the federal government, those able-bodied Americans that could. And we had a very robust workforce. We had 68% participation. So only a 6-point delta, and we can have a very strong, robust economy. And the only way you're going to have a growing economy is to put people to work. And that's all I've done for over 20 years is create jobs, push back on the government regulations that come down. People who sign both sides of the paycheck are the ones who truly understand the overreach of the federal government.
Well, you're one of those weirdos that quotes the Constitution. I just don't understand it at all. I'm sorry.
Well, it should be the core of everything we do. We should be able to have a broader skill set than just to, sit there and talk about it on a day-to-day basis and not put something practical in place and understand how it practically impacts Americans. Because, you know, if you go around a district, and I've been crisscrossing this district now for a year, people love the Constitution. They don't truly understand the core of what it is and who it is. But we need more people serving less of the big government and more about having a big God. And today, you know, we heard of the passing of Reverend Graham, and he reminded 99 years old. He lived a wonderful life, and he reminded us all that God is the way, not government, and that we need to be remembering that the only thing that we're guaranteed in this country is opportunity, not outcome, and that we need to do more to secure those opportunities. That is embedded in the idea of why we separated from England back in 1776. And if we'll remember that, and remember the Constitution is really the actions around why we separated. I mean, even as we talked about last week, the Constitution dates back to our separation from England. And we need to remember that. And it should be at the core of who we are. And the true liberty in America is laid out, you know, by our former president, my hero, Ronald Reagan, said that, you know, the greatest social program is a job. And then just recently, with his own words, as only he could do, President Trump said that the greatest social program is a big, fat paycheck. And so jobs are the way. They keep us from doing bad things to each other. They make us respect each other.
Congress has to make a decision next month somewhere on the immigration issue, particularly on the so-called Dreamers, the DACA program.
March 5th. Yeah, you know, I've been a tremendous supporter of securing our southern border with a wall where it's applicable. I think we've done too much in the past of violating our own laws and setting up an example of, you know, enticing people to come here because we can't even do our own thing, which it really, again, goes back to the Constitution, that Congress has the right, the responsibility, the accountability to create an immigration policy. And for years, we've never done that. We've just allowed our laws to be broken, and we've allowed bad things to happen. So we're as liable for this problem as the people who come here. But I will tell you that, you know, we're doing a dismal service right now to securing the sovereignty of this country by not securing our southern border. That's got to be one of the first steps. I applaud President Trump for making that part of this whole deal, because if you can't cut off the source, all you're doing is going to make a bunch of people illegal right now, and the problem will never be fixed. You know, if you go back and look at Ronald Reagan, 3.6 million people were naturalized, became citizens of the country, and now we have 12 million people here. So just making them naturalized is not going to fix the problem. We have great solutions for the people who are already here. Let's stop the number of people who are coming here illegally.
We've talked all around several of them, but I'd like to give you an opportunity to simply enumerate priorities for Kevin Hern. Why do you want to run for this job in Congress?
Yeah, it's as simple as this. Anything that goes after the current job holders and makes their life more miserable, or the job creators and makes their life more miserable. And it's countless. It changes every day. But that's the core of who I am. As I mentioned earlier, I think there is no better opportunity in America than to have a job. And I think it's the ABCs. It's about getting a first job, a job. It's about getting B, a better job, and then C, getting a career. And we've got to get, you know, I applaud, as I said again a year ago, I applaud the idea of bringing foreign investment back into this country so that we have manufacturing. That's where a lot of the middle class jobs went when the manufacturing went away. You know, when I was growing up, when you were growing up, the middle class was just a pathway to get to where you wanted to go. Today, it's like the Grand Canyon. And people walk up to the edge and say, there's no way I can get across, so I'm just going to stay in poverty. And I'm going to be more dependent on the federal government. So my whole deal is anything that's keeping us dependent on the federal government, to eliminate that or a sort of pathway, just like you do in business. The second thing is create the jobs out there so that people, as they get off of welfare, there's a place to go. So that's my whole narrative. That's all I've ever done. That's my experience.
So really it is as simple as, I mean, well, it's not simple, but it's easy to understand as that 1-2-3, that ABC program that we talked about.
Yeah, you know, I've spent a number of years, 13 years, working for the franchisees across the country and working between McDonald's Corporation, a very large corporation, and the independent small businessman. And what I found from people who really wanted to make you think they were really smart is make things sound very complicated. And really, most of these issues are very simple fixes. And most Americans, they don't really care about what goes on in the federal government as long as they're out of the way.
I know you say you're happy to make this trip from your home to Bartlesville, Washington County, and I know you're going to be back a lot between now and the primary. But again, if people want to visit your website, campaigns run on dollars. You encourage those contributions. It's a way for people to say, I understand your message.
Sure. HernForCongress.com, H-E-R-N for Congress.com. And it's really about three things. It's really about message people and the money to take care of getting both of those out and paying for your people. We've been very blessed. We've had a great, probably this quarter is the most successful quarter we've had so far. So the energy and the inertia behind our campaign is going very well. And we really appreciate the folks of Oklahoma, especially the 1st District, that have come out and support us.
Well, again, there is a forum in the process of being organized for later on, and, of course, the primary coming up real soon. Kevin, thank you so much for your time this morning.
As always, Charlie, thank you.
Candidate for the 1st Congressional District, Kevin Hern, on 1400 K1.
Okay, men, time to be an all-star caregiver. Drive them to physical therapy, doctor's appointments. Be there emotionally and physically. Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Caregiving is tougher than tough. Find care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by